Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jeremy Smith from Lender Media on the show, back on the show, I should say. We've had Jeremy on quite a few times in the past. He's always just a ton of fun to have on. He's an industry man. He's been working in the fishing industry in lots of different capacities for a really long time. We talk about it a little bit here on the show, just kind of getting a sort of a life update or a career update from Jeremy. He's been involved in fishing, the fishing industry, for a really long time, so he gets it all. He's a passionate angler. He can talk fishing, just about any fishing topic, on a super high level, so it's fun to pick his brain fishing-wise, of course, but then, you know, he's worked in marketing and content creation, and you know, he understands the business side of things, and a great conversation here. We cover a lot of stuff. Let's get to it. All things fishing with Jeremy Smith. The Onyx Fish app is an excellent tool for finding your next fishing spot. Download the app today to get free lake information in the states of Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm talking about research tools that we talk about on the JMO Podcast all the time with all the top pros here in the Midwest. I'm talking about satellite imagery, fisheries data, lake surveys, contour maps. That and so much more can be found in one place here now with the Onyx Fish app, a phenomenal tool both on and off the water for discovering new great fishing opportunities, many of which you would have never known existed. Link is in the description of this podcast. Check out Shipsville Resort on Lake of the Woods in northern Minnesota for your next ice fishing destination. Their lodging options are fantastic for small groups, all the way on up to bigger groups like family get-togethers or maybe a corporate outing. Enjoy the comforts of one of their heated day-use fish houses spread between the Morris Point area and the Long Point area as well to give their guests the most options and opportunities to cover the big lake and to stay on fish. Head to their website, shipswillresort.com, to check out their photo gallery and all their ice fishing packages. That link is in the description of this podcast. Are you looking for the perfect winter getaway? Look no further than Minnesota's own Lake of the Woods. Welcome to the walleye capital of the world, where the next hook set could be a big walleye, a delicious sauger, a giant pike, or a state record burbot. But it's not just about the fishing. From cozy resorts to unique bars on the ice, Lake of the Woods offers winter fun for everyone. Plus, the resorts and expert ice fishing guides up there are ready to make your experience easy and unforgettable. Discover the magic of Lake of the Woods. Visit lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Yeah, so updates, man. Like, get us updated. It's been a while, so what are you thinking about this time of year? I mean, first off, I guess it's, you know, fishing podcast. Do you get much fishing in the winter?
I do some, but I'm not like I was when I was in my 20s and early 30s when I was just gung-ho about ice fishing like it was open water fishing. I think plenty of people can relate to that. I got a couple little kids and busy with work, so I get out when we can, and then we're obviously planning a lot for the upcoming season. We've got a pretty busy travel schedule and open water and a lot of moving parts at Lender Media. So it's a good time of year to be in the office and kind of lay the foundation for what the upcoming season is gonna bring. And we're selling a lot of stuff right now too. So it's fun. It keeps you mentally engaged, a little more office time, but I'm not minding it right now looking outside when the wind's blowing like 40 it's just like a whiteout. So it's pretty good.
Well, what's kind of your status update work-wise? Like, what is sort of the title that you wear on your name tag over there?
Oh, man, it's, we're a small business and everybody's always helping out wherever they can. I kind of function wherever I can be most helpful. So do a lot with sales, help with the production side of, production side of things and a lot of the strategy that's going into the to the business with the other team members. So there, you know, there's plenty of that that's going on right now. And then we're obviously kicking shows out for the end of the, or for what's airing right now. So watching a lot of that, but really it's a real generalist. It seems like over here, we're, you know, doing everything when needs pop up. And I think that's just kind of the way small businesses work in a lot of cases. So.
Yeah. How many years have you been over there?
19.
Yeah, dude.
So yeah, quite a few. So I started in January of 2006. So yeah, this is my 19th year here. So
that's like an anniversary kind of a deal. I mean, it's February now, but right? That's cool, man.
Yeah. So,
you know, for you to have 19 years in, you're kind of putting yourself in a pretty small class of individuals that can survive the industry that long, man. I mean, what's your speech on longevity in the industry?
Well, I really think a lot of it has been, you know, the content that we create. So working for the lenders, they're, you know, really creative people. And we've always tried to focus on making really good, you know, good educational content that's entertaining and then delivering what our customers want. So that's been a part of it. And of course, you know, we've had a really good team of people here that can execute a lot of the tasks that we're supposed to do. So really, you know, it's a lot of it's just, you know, having a good sense of where the industry is headed, what the needs of the customer are, making sure that we're creating the content that the viewer likes. And they're just really simple things overall, but then you just gotta have the follow through. So that's, to me, that's really all it is.
What do you see? What is sort of the big trends right now? I mean, what can we talk about on that front as far as like what are some of the most interesting topics, you know, from a content perspective, you know, that you're kind of striving for that you feel like are some of the big needs in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, obviously electronics are a big talking point right now, and particularly forward-facing sonar and how all of that is playing out. And of course, we work with Johnson Outdoors. They're a partner of ours. So we're using the new technology as it comes out all the time and learning, you know, what it is and how to understand it. And it's pretty interesting getting feedback from the audience and that there's obviously people who really love the new technology and think it's amazing how, you know, it can teach us so many different things about what's going on under there. And then there's also plenty of people who are like, hey, you know, what is fishing turning into? Is this just a video game? So, you know, I'm really right now trying to understand, and I think a lot of other people are, what do anglers really want, and how does all this technology play out in the angling community? What does it mean for fisheries in the future? What do anglers really want with this stuff? So I've been wrestling with that question quite a bit, as have a number of different folks. Here in Minnesota, we've got these DNR work groups. So most of them are species specific. So for example, there would be a walleye work group where a number of individuals who have interest in walleye fishing would meet with the DNR, and they kind of have their agenda on things that they think are happening in fisheries or management changes or goals that they might have for walleye fisheries. Same with bass, muskie, pike, panfish. And it was about maybe 18 months ago, they started one on technology. So I'm on that work group, and we actually had a meeting yesterday, and there's been a lot of really interesting discussions coming out of that, because the conversation, no matter where we go, just always seems to come back to technology and particularly forward-facing sonar.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of interesting. I mean, I don't want to make you talk about something like too controversial, but I'm kind of interested in this topic because I feel like, and I'm totally guilty of this too, but I feel like this is kind of the time of year, it seems like, when a lot of those conversations are happening, you know, like what, you know, you talk about the state departments, you know, they're forecasting, or what are we doing for our management of our fisheries, you know, for the upcoming year, and, you know, whatever they're looking back on the past year, whatever it is. Like, this is when a lot of conversations are had, and if people want to have input or just want to be listening in real time, it's like, this is when they're being had. It's almost like, you know, sometimes it can kind of blow by. Like, highlighting those conversations right now, it's like, I feel like that's a good awareness, because when it comes summer and you go out, you know, for on a lake for the first time in a long time, and you don't have a really good outing, and you know, it's like people start blaming the DNR, or there's something wrong with the management or whatever, and they've got all these great ideas, you know, as to why it's terrible, and that, you know, they might have all these great ideas as to how to fix it or whatever, but, you know, they weren't paying attention now when a lot of stuff was being talked about, and they might've been a little bit more educated on, you know, I mean, I'm kind of generalizing there, but I do find it to be an interesting topic, man. So I'm kind of curious about some of that stuff on that front, you know, like this time of year, there's a lot of that stuff to be paying attention to.
Yeah. You know, and I can't speak other states. So we're here in Minnesota, like in January, there's a roundtable event, the Minnesota DNR has stakeholders, and that always seems to spark a lot of conversation with different special interest groups in the outdoors, whether it's rough grouse or white-tailed deer or muskies or walleyes, whatever it is. And then, you know, the legislature's in session right now too. So there's different bills that are going through. So winter is kind of that time when a lot of decisions are being made regarding wildlife or fisheries management, or, you know, getting the groundwork laid. And then it does seem like in the summertime, anglers are busy, they're fishing, and, you know, I'm as guilty as anybody about this. So when that busy travel schedule happens, a lot of it just kind of falls through the cracks. So now is a good time. And there is some really interesting conversations going on right now. And they certainly need to be thoughtful. And you know, there's just a lot of, I don't even know where to begin with this. There's just so much to talk about, especially as it relates to technology and different fisheries. And the bandwidth I have, you know, to deal with something like this is just pretty much on the musky topic. But I know that there's a lot of other people who, you know, have other thoughts on what technology's role is in fishing. So
you can find all kinds of crazy stuff on like Facebook or whatever on a newsfeed somewhere. But I mean, do you feel like in Minnesota, like in any capacity for any species in any situation, do you feel like we're anywhere near some type of a ban or a limitation on forward sonar?
I don't, not right now. And I think the issue is super complex. So, I mean, it definitely is a tool. I mean, there's, in my opinion, never been a more powerful tool for learning and understanding what's happening with fisheries and just giving you a better lens into what's going on down there. So, I mean, that said, it certainly creates a lot of opportunities and I can't speak to even though I've used it in a number of situations, like the one that I keep coming back to just because I have a special interest in it and know a number of people within that small circle of musky fishing. We've been having a lot of really good conversations now about what is happening to musky fishing, the musky fishing culture, some catch rates, you know, especially with the open water thing and using this technology to sharpshoot muskies. And so there's some really good conversations going on right now. Leech Lake is kind of the focal point right now, where there are a number of anglers who are concerned about the number of fish being caught in open water. And so looking at possibly technology more so, or a regulation, not necessarily regulating the technology, but, you know, having the technology, knowing there are areas of lakes where there might be large concentrations of fish susceptible to angling pressure with this technology, that maybe we should say, hey, you know, during this time frame, we should step back and let these fish be after they spawned, and then let the, you know, open the rest of the lake up to fishing. But a few areas we should be selective in, and if we're fishing them there with this technology or not.
I do think that, you know, the perception online, like, you know, if somebody's not paying attention to everything going on, you can definitely see a couple of headlines and maybe feel like, you know, we're just one inch away from banning forward facing sonar in a lot of places for, you know, like just blanket statements, you know, just like the internet's just the wild west with some of this stuff. So it's interesting.
I can say Minnesota is nowhere even near having a discussion. I mean, we're talking about the technology, but there's nothing even close to saying that we would ban this. And I personally think that it be as complex as it is, and if it really needs to be looked at for specific situations and you know, the broad reaching no more of this, I don't think there's an appetite for that. But I mean, I also think that the anglers need to say what they, you know, what they really want out of their management, you know, from the DNR. So, but broad reaching, you know, no more of this to me, you know, I don't see how that would ever play out. So,
the time to be involved in those, meaningfully involved in some of those conversations, or maybe just not necessarily involved in the conversation, but now's a good time to just keep your ears open and listen. And yeah, so that you're just informed about it. You know.
Yeah. And reach out. Like, again, I can't speak to the Dakotas or Wisconsin, what other states, but you know, if you jumped on the Minnesota DNR website, there's a spot for you to offer your opinions or your thoughts on what's happening with fisheries or technology. And you know, a lot of the conversations I have, if people are concerned, you ask, well, have you said anything? Have you talked to anybody? You know, most people are no, nothing. So, if they're not aware, then nothing's going to happen. So, it does matter that if you're, you know, you're concerned about something, or you want to, there's something that you really like and you want to protect, then you should definitely reach out and let it be known how you feel about it. So,
yeah. Yeah. What else do you do this time of year? I mean, you know, as far as like meaningful topics in the industry, you know, we can talk about just about anything. It's getting to be, I mean, we got so much winter left, but man, it's getting to be, we're not too far away from like boat rigging season and all that stuff. I mean, I hate to, you know, bring that sort of stuff up, but it's, you know, there's just anything that you got going on, man. What should we talk about?
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I'm thinking about that. I've got an old John boat too, that I've been working on this winter that, since I had kids, haven't really done much with it. It's been sitting there. I use it for river fishing and screwing around. I've got a son who's 10 now. And my daughter loves swimming, but just been working on fixing that beauty up and getting that ready for, it'll be kind of our cabin boat, and that'll be fun to see them screwing around with that. But yeah, it's had me pulling a few wires. That's pretty simple. But right, you know, right before we jumped on the call, a truck pulled in here and we had to run out and unload a bunch of stuff. So the gear is coming for the boats already. So we have four boats here that we rig every spring. And so, yeah, that's a big job, man, when that stuff comes in. And it's not as easy as it used to be. There's a lot that goes into rigging a new boat now, especially with all the different trolling motors and shallow water anchors and battery chargers and the number of batteries and the screens you're going to put in there. So it's a big job, man, but I actually really enjoy it. It's pretty fun.
Are you looking for the perfect winter getaway? Look no further than Minnesota's own Lake of the Woods. Welcome to the walleye capital of the world, where the next hook set could be a big walleye, a delicious sauger, a giant pike, or a state record burbot. But it's not just about the fishing. From cozy resorts to unique bars on the ice, Lake of the Woods offers winter fun for everyone. Plus, the resorts and expert ice fishing guides up there are ready to make your experience easy and unforgettable. Discover the magic of Lake of the Woods. Visit lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. The Onyx Fish app is an excellent tool for finding your next fishing spot. Download the app today to get free lake information in the states of Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm talking about research tools that we talk about on the JMO podcast all the time with all the top pros here in the Midwest. I'm talking about satellite imagery, fisheries data, lake surveys, contour maps. That and so much more can be found in one place here now with the Onyx Fish app, a phenomenal tool, both on and off the water, for discovering new great fishing opportunities, many of which you would have never known existed. Link is in the description of this podcast. Check out Shipswell Resort on Lake of the Woods in northern Minnesota for your next ice fishing destination. Their lodging options are fantastic for small groups, all the way on up to bigger groups like family get-togethers or maybe a corporate outing. Enjoy the comforts of one of their heated day-use fish houses spread between the Morris Point area and the Long Point area as well, to give their guests the most options and opportunities to cover the big lake and to stay on fish. Head to their website, shipswellresort.com, to check out their photo gallery and all their ice fishing packages. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloff Construction at their website, zuloffconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Yeah, I mean, that conversation has changed a lot. You know, I'm sure you field a lot of questions on it, but like even just you and your own personal perspective, like what are some of the, you know, what are some of the big like things about rigging a boat that are just so important nowadays? It's like 5 years ago weren't even a thing. It's like, yeah, oh, like everything.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the biggest thing is that like a lot of people are, whether they're getting a new boat or they're, you know, upgrading their electronics, which you hear a lot of. And we were in a sports show in Iowa 2 weekends ago, and this came up a number of times, like, hey, you know, I just got a new, whatever, I got a new Helix in the bow, new one here, and I've got this on there. And, you know, it's like, I went to start my boat and the battery died. And the one thing with these electronics is that they draw a ton of power. And so, you know, going to Fleet Farm and buying a whatever lead acid marine battery, like that just doesn't cut it anymore. If you're going to have, if you're going to be running a lot of screens, I would definitely recommend investing in lithium power. You can still get away with lead acid batteries for your trolling motor, but if you're going to try to run some big screens, you really, really want to have that lithium power source. You're just going to start to run into problems with screen clarity and with, you can be just dead in the water too, where your boat doesn't start or you turn the key and all your electronics die. So having a good, you know, good power source is a big deal with these new screens.
I was having that conversation with some people. Just over the last couple of years, had some meaningful conversations, but like, you know, forward-facing sonar kind of gets the headlines of a lot of like fishing, you know, just there's the big fishing topics, or, you know, it's like you, mm-hmm. if you really want to do or say something flashy, you can just bring up, you know, forward-facing sonar topics.
Sure.
But yeah. I feel like, so it kind of, I guess what I'm getting at is it kind of feels like we're in this era, in quotations, like we're in the forward sonar era of fishing. But I feel like it's probably more accurately, or if you were looking into it more deeply, like we're kind of in the lithium battery, like lithium power era. Lithium power is a deeper rooted, like, technology advancement. It affects so much more things. You know, like you said, trolling motors, you know, just your electronics and just the opportunity or potential that gives you. And then ice fishing, I mean, it's just, it, you can't overstate. Like right now, I was just making a video, Jason and I were just doing a video in a Shiels, how like 5 years ago, an ice auger display at any given Shiels here in the Midwest would have been like an entire wall. And they would have had, you know, every different model of all the different brands they deal with, the propane and the gas and the different sizes and the flightings. And now that wall is about a 20-foot wall with about 10 options, all lithium powered. They don't have a gas on the rack. You know, they don't have a gas or propane on the rack.
Oh, exactly. And yeah, it's not like you go ice fishing on a crowded lake and hear gas augers anymore either. I mean, if you do, you're like, what the hell is that? What?
Yeah. No. I kind of miss that, because that's like the sound of fishing, right? It's like one of those, it's like one of those things. It's like so iconic, you know, it's like watching grumpier old men. And when they're out on the ice in those scenes and you hear somebody's auger, the old jiffy, you know, fire up. But yeah, man, it's that lithium power era, you know? So, I mean, I just feel like that's such a big,
it really is. And, you know, jumping back to boats and power too. Like if you're thinking about reinvesting in new screens, like I would just really strongly recommend that you're going to take a peek at adding a lithium battery to your mix, just knowing that you're going to be disappointed if you're trying to run lead acid on that. I mean, kind of the one exception would be is that if you're running the big outboard a bunch and you've got a big alternator in that, but you do want to have, to me, you really want that lithium power. So just a tip for people, like as we're rigging boats right now, like we've got, Jimmy's boat's going to have a 250 on it. Al's has a big one on it too. And, you know, they've got 50 amp alternators. So you can get away with like a 135 amp hour starting battery that you can run your electronics on, because when they're running that motor, it's kicking 50 amps back to the battery where I think Jason runs a tiller too. You know, I run a 90 horse tiller. That's only got 15 amp on it. So I need a way bigger battery to power those screens just because I'm not getting the, you know, I'm not putting the amps back into that battery as I'm going all day. So there's a lot of considerations, and definitely do some research on the power side of things if you're going to upgrade your screens.
We should talk a little bit of fishing. I got to press you a little bit on fishing. Even if you haven't been doing a ton, what do you feel like this time of year on a season like this? If you, you know, you look out the window at the winter that we're having, you know, just people can get out, you know, a lot of places where if they, you know, there's not enough snow to keep people from getting out. If the access is good enough, you know, it's like people can be out there and like in their grandma's grocery getter.
Yeah.
You know, you can just drive a station wagon like the good old days out on the ice. Now, a lot of places, you know, this time of year, man, what do you feel like are some of the best fish patterns or opportunities people ought to be looking at?
Yeah. I mean, well, obviously there's the ice conditions are amazing. The industry certainly needed that. So you can get around everywhere. I mean, in Minnesota right now, it does seem like obviously the panfish stuff is good if you want to do backcountry stuff, but you know, the Mille Lacs perch thing has been pretty crazy. I mean, maybe not for you guys in North Dakota, but for us in Minnesota, it's been a long time since there was really big perch in Mille Lacs, and that's been a really, really hot deal. I was out there last week too, and it's super, super fun. There's a bunch of big perch in there. Again, it sounds like the walleye fishing's pretty tough, but you know, and then it does seem like you get to this time of year, the walleye bite gets a lot tougher, real super narrow windows in the evening, but the crappies are always pretty consistent, it seems like. And the guys that have been out around here, which I have not been crappie fishing in a while, it's been pretty solid, both the basins and on the weed line stuff. So
that perch deal over on Mille Lacs is definitely exploding. I don't know, it was it was like 2 years ago. I think I had Brad Hawthorne on the podcast, and he said it there too. He's like, man, I shouldn't be saying this, but the perch are coming. He's like, the perch are here. Not a lot of people know about it. He said, there's going to be a perch boom. And I just remember thinking, okay, you know, just noted, you know, we'll see where that takes us. But man, it seems like this year, I mean, unless it's only good for the YouTubers of the world, it seems like the perch, you know, there's a lot of content coming out of there in the last 3 weeks, 2 weeks. And that definitely seems like a good deal. I mean, that's kind of a big boost to Mille Lacs. Not that it needs it. It's such a great destination, but for winter fishing, you know, that's such a cool opportunity that's really blossoming.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think about like the last 2 years, those poor folks just had terrible ice conditions, not hardly anybody out there. And, you know, I can remember going to Mille Lacs in high school and just being totally blown away on, you know, they've got roads named out there in the big cities of houses and double decker houses. And it's just like everything you would envision with like a, you know, just an ice fishing town out there. And it was, I mean, when I was out there last Saturday, I brought my kids out, and it was like that again, you know, like you get to an intersection on the ice roads out there, and you're waiting to make your turn to merge onto traffic, right? Like it's, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and the fishing's good. So, it's pretty cool, you know, to see that back there. And if you get, you know, lucky, you got to do some moving around. I mean, guys that are sitting still are catching some jumbos, but you start jumping around and you can land on them pretty good. And there's, you know, the walleye bite seems pretty tough. We didn't really have much for walleye action out there, but then there's a lot of Cisco's biting too, which are whatever. They're fun to watch on the screen and handle too. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's kind of that time of year where you know, if you're on any type of a bite, you know, the reality is that we're probably ought to be happy with that. Cause it is kind of that midwinter thick ice. Usually, you know, even if we don't have a ton of snow cover, there is some, so like light penetration, you know, the whole like conversation around midwinter doldrums, right? Like there's oxygen levels, like things are, that whole thing is happening. It's like, on one hand, we need these types of conditions to create, you know, plentiful opportunities, and it's good for the industry. But on the other hand, that's kind of, you know, a good hard, cold, freeze up, you know, type of winter creates that midwinter deal. So anytime, any solid bite that you could be on like this time of year, especially something that you could do in a hard sided shack, you know, within reason, it's like those are pretty phenomenal opportunities, really, not to be overstated, but yeah.
Yeah, well, for sure. And if you don't have to have a snowmobile or four wheeler or whatever, you know, other modes of transportation, you just drive your truck out to the spot. Like that's really, really, really nice, you know? So Yeah. But yeah, as you know, this time of year, it gets pretty tough. But yeah, I mean, I think with the lack of snow cover, there's still plenty of fish, biting. And it's definitely still really good fishing in a lot of spots. So.
Yeah, that hard-sided fish house, that's another topic that, you know, probably doesn't, I have to bring it up a lot because, you know, you can appreciate this. So many anglers that I have on the show, you included, it's like everybody's so hardcore. It's mm-hmm. like everybody's like, you know, it's like have a conversation about with Tony Roach about, you know, fishing in a sleeper shack. Forget about it. You know, it's right, like he's never that dude, you know, he's just going to drill, right? And that's what we're going to talk about. It's like that's just one example of many. But it's like, you know, when we're just sort of talking about the industry and the good opportunities out there, like the hard-sided houses, like if that's the best opportunity for so many individuals, like it's a good year for that. There's a lot of that happening. Like the conditions allowed for people to get out and be on some pretty good spots. They don't even have to compromise. In a lot of cases, they don't have to compromise too much on where they, you know, they can pick their spots. But maybe, I don't know, like maybe this is an unfair question to you, but if we were going to talk about that, like the difference between being like run and gun, but if you're going to strategize, you know, where you're just going to take your family out in a hard-sided shack somewhere, whether it's your own or you're, you know, renting or something like that, you know, maybe just sort of the difference in strategy or just some thought process, there's something you could offer as far as, you know, how to fish, you know, how to get yourself bit when you're going to fish out of a hard-sided shack. And, you know, cause not everybody can just be these thunder jocks that are out there drilling a million holes. Is that an unfair question to you, Jeremy?
No, I totally get it. So, I mean, and we've got, you know, I've done plenty of that. We've got a Yeti sitting in the back here. And, you know, to me, like if you can get out of a resort, have them, you know, talk to the people, they always have some really good ideas on where the bite's been. I mean, they're moving houses all the time. They're plowing roads, they're checking on people. So whether you're renting or bringing your own, you know, I would definitely recommend going through a resort that's got a road system. They're gonna put you in a good spot. So I mean, that's a really big deal. But if we were hauling our own house out, like what we would typically do is you know, usually have a couple vehicles. If you didn't need somebody to plow you a road to a spot, or if you're gonna have to have somebody plow your road, like try to get out ahead of time or do a little fishing and kind of see where you think you want it to be. You know, want it to be at. Just don't go out there haphazardly and drop the house, because it's pretty easy to set up on a spot and catch nothing. And if you just put a little time in ahead, you know, whether it's just drilling out your holes, if you want to fish a break, you know, you want the front end to be an 18 and the back and 22 or what, you know, whatever it is. So I, you know, just do a little research ahead of time and check out the spot in detail before you just drive out and say, oh, this looks good on the map and drop the house, because little differences, as you know, in anything in fishing can mean the difference between catching lots and getting the big goose egg.
Picking the spot or picking the species, whatever you're working backwards from, if it's like, mm-hmm. if you know what lake you're going to be on, you know, then that kind of tells you what your opportunities are for species. And then you think about the pattern. You know, it's like we're all working backwards from some decision that sort of like starts it all, right? It's like you're either picking mm-hmm. the lake, or you're somewhere where you can pick a number of lakes, but you want to pick the species. Like this time of year, you want to pick crappies, or you want to pick perch or bluegills or whatever. And it's like we're all working backwards from something there. But ultimately, being thoughtful and picking a spot is a heck of a lot more important than, you know, figuring out your lure selection or your line selection, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Absolutely. You know, I mean, even if you're doing something like Red Lake, where it's just, you know, a seemingly big bowl. I mean, I just had some buddies that were up there last weekend that ended up getting in the crappies pretty good, but you know, they took their time and asked around and they did some fishing outside, and whatever, it was crummy weather when they were up there, but they set up in a good spot and they, you know, they hammered them. And had they not just done a little bit of extra work where they were originally going to set up, like there's just nothing there. So it went from catching possibly nothing or very few to like just a stellar weekend. And it was a difference of 200 yards in a seemingly, you know, just big open bowl, right?
What are some common questions that you get or you get in the office that you guys are discussing that I would not know, you know, to even ask you? I'm just sort of curious about that. If anything jumps into your head, just some, or even just some of the more enjoyable, you know, write-ins that you've had recently that would just be kind of a fun thing to talk about or break down.
Well, the questions obviously vary, but we get a lot of questions about, you know, where should I plan my fishing trip, which is, you know, super fun. I love talking about that. And you know, all of us here love Canadian fishing, especially, you know, not that we don't like fishing in the States, but we do get a lot of questions about, hey, you know, I'm going to Canada. I want to fish for this, that, or the other thing. And this is what I'm looking for. And so, you know, those are really fun and great conversations. And, you know, people that have experienced fishing up there understand, you know, just like how amazing it is. And it's not only that the fishing is great, but the scenery is, you know, spectacular, and they are just memories and trips that you'll never forget. And the fisheries, of course, are so diverse that if you want to go somewhere and catch a zillion walleyes where you just feel like the greatest fisherman ever, you know, like, yeah, man, that's possible. You want to catch huge pike or muskies, or you want to go on a lake trout trip, and there's obviously giant crappies up there, and just so many different options and opportunities and places you can go and different experiences you can have, from flying in to bringing your own rig to houseboating. You know, there's just, I just live for those trips. And it's cool that we have so many viewers that we talk to that, you know, plan those trips every year too.
It is that time of year too. That's another thing. You're kind of like my industry guy for awareness and all these topics. Like, you know, again, just reverting back to earlier in the conversation, it's like, one thing that nobody's thinking of this time of year is when all those conversations about, you know, management or the State Department is being had. This is also one of those times of year where if you're going to plan a destination trip for the upcoming season, now's a great time to be thinking and or booking that stuff. If you want a prime spot for, you know, a summer or fall musky trip, like, that stuff books up fast, sometimes years in advance, you know, for like really, really awesome places. But this is like one of those times where we probably get, you know, sort of caught, you know, unprepared or behind the eight ball when we start thinking about it, when the ice actually starts melting. But really, like, now's a great time to be talking about planning a destination trip.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, and a lot of stuff too, like you mentioned, you know, June in a lot of cases would be booked up in a lot of places. I'm not saying they all are, but you know, that gets booked up really early. But yeah, now is when you definitely want to be planning those different destinations. And what I just love about it too is when we talk to people, it's like, oh, you know, I want to catch this, that, or the other thing. And like, it, the way the Canadian tourism industry is set up, like, if there's like a vacation that you have in mind, a style of fishing that you want to do, a fish you want to fish for with this type of accommodations, like, it's there, man. I'm telling you, it's there. You can get anything you're looking for, from just totally being on your own out in the wilderness and not having to be around people or deal with anything, to you want somebody to, you know, bring your cup, wake you up and bring you a cup of coffee and breakfast in bed, and, you know, fly out to the place that hasn't been fished for 3 years, like, spend tons of, you can do anything. It's just so cool.
You've probably fished a lot of destinations. I mean, not even just in Canada, but a lot in Canada, like you're talking about. And it's like, you know, you've been to a lot of places. What do you feel like is some of the most sought after stuff? You know, again, we're just kind of in this portion of the conversation, it's like, now's the time to be thinking about year round, like booking a trip, you know, a hard water or open water. And so, I mean, are there any like specific opportunities that you feel like just are really, really fun to make mention of right now for anybody out there? Like, what's just a baller destination or fishing opportunity that would be fun to talk about?
A few of them come to mind. I mean, when you think about, you know, really cool Canadian destinations, like Sunset Country in Northwest Ontario. So that's kind of, you know, Rainy Lake, Lake of the Woods, and going north there. We work with tourism up there, and Jerry, the guy up there, always gives us a hard time because Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes. And he's like, yeah, dude, we've got 70,000. We've got a park that's got 10,000, you know. So the opportunities up there are just, it's just so cool. So if you like the sense of adventure, you know, like the big waters up there are just so incredibly cool. Obviously, Lake of the Woods and Rainy and Eagle and Wabagoon and Lac Seul and the English River and the Winnipeg River. I mean, it's like all insane multi-species fisheries, big walleyes, big pike, muskie. You know, they've got, you know, the big lakes have all the key species that you're looking for. And they're just, they really are straight up incredible fisheries. So a lot of people are like, oh, I want, you know, I've got a nice boat and I want to do flying because I want to catch, you know, I want to catch a ton of fish. And it's like, well, you can bring your boat to a lot of these places. And the fishing often, I'm not saying it's better, but the fishing often in many of these places is as good as you can experience in a lot of different flying locations, you know. So I just love that area. There's so much water up there. It is just so incredibly cool. And it's just such a fun way to fish too. That, you know, it's like once you get a taste of it, having, you know, been in Minnesota fishing for a few months or the Dakotas or wherever, and then like all of a sudden you get up there in that wilderness setting and you can just like read the landscape and be like, oh, you know, look at the shorelines. You got a bunch of round rocks that come to a point there. That must be a good rocky point and whatever. Go throw a jig and a plastic out there and catch a pile of walleyes and feel like you're the greatest fisherman ever. You know, like the fish are dumb and they're abundant and like, it's just, it's great. You know, you're just good. You just are a better fisherman by being there. And then there's the other cool stuff like the big trout and the big pike that live, you know, even in further north that people haven't done that. Like those are trips that are absolutely worth doing. Just the travel to get there, how cool it is getting up to those places and what they offer, the remoteness of the far north is an experience that anybody who's done it is just like, it's priceless. It's just such a great, great deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like, you know, like a lot of that, what you're talking about, that those destinations, you know, even during peak of the season, when every resort on the lake is absolutely plumb full, a lot of those places, man, it's just unpressured fish. Like even on the most popular weekends up there where everybody's everywhere, like you can get into a bay that's full of fish where you don't see a boat.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I was up on Eagle this fall with my kids and, you know, you kind of put it in perspective. It's like I made a long run to fish a section of the lake and there was actually somebody fishing the spot I wanted to go to down there. And there was like, I saw another boat like a mile away and I was just like, oh, you know, like I'm out. Like we're going somewhere else. Like, I saw two boats.
Two boats like, in 2 square miles, and you're like, no, this spot's taken.
Yeah, and there's 1,000 spots to fish around there. But you know, I like that when I go up there, just fishing by yourself. You know, so yeah. But I mean, that's just what's so great about it.
You imagine being like on the walleye opener in Minnesota and on Leech Lake, and going into somewhere and only seeing two boats in like 2 square miles, and thinking that.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
it definitely changes your perspective on what fishing pressure is. That's for sure, you know. So it's great. And I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are walleye fishermen that listen to this, and I feel like a lot of walleye talk. You know, it's like talking to a lot of folks who go up there is like lots of eaters, tons of action, catch 100 a day. But man, there's big fish up there too. Like that's what's so great about it. I mean, you've got shots of double digit fish on, you know, most of those big water fisheries and some really huge ones, but you're not, in almost all cases, you're not like sacrificing numbers for big ones. Like a lot of them just have both. They're just like super, super healthy.
Yeah. And same thing in the winter too. When you talk about the winter bite, the patterns and the flash bites and the, you know, just how tricky it can be to really get your hands on a lot of them. But then you think about that Canadian fishing, where if you're on the ball and you book the type of experience that you're looking for at the place that can offer that for you, it's like, man, you're going to go up there and you're going to, you know, your learning curve or just your confidence curve is going to go, you know, you're going to just be 10 lifetimes ahead after one, you know, 4 or 5 day fishing trip going somewhere.
Yeah. And you bring up a great point about confidence there too. It's like, it's such a great place to try artificials, different artificial techniques you might have heard of, whether it's jig and wrapping or snapping plastics or hair jigs or whatever it is. Like it works up there and you're going to get a lot of feedback. Like you're going to catch fish on it. It just gives you that confidence to bring that stuff home. And, you know, a lot of fish haven't seen, in many places, haven't seen presentations like that. I mean, it was cool. at one of the shows we were doing earlier this year. A guy, he was older, but he had some really great Canadian trips. And he's like, yeah, you know, whatever. I bought those jigging wraps that you guys were talking about. And I brought him up to, I think it was the Winnipeg River he was on. And he's like, so yeah, I bought, you know, bought a dozen of them, and I lost a few. And, but he's like, you know, I can't say that I caught like tons more fish than the other guys, but I caught more fish than them. But he's like, this was the funny part is when I didn't fish bait the whole time. He said, we got the bait bill and they split it up. And he said, it cost me about half as much to lose whatever a dozen jigging wraps than it did for those guys in minnows too. So people get worried about, oh, I'm going to break them off. But, you know, you just catch tons of fish, but you just bring that back and you've got so much more confidence. And there's just, you know, not that jigging minnow isn't awesome, but there's really fun, different ways to catch fish too.
Yeah. Isn't that it? That brings up an interesting point I've seen some light bulbs go off in people's heads, just having conversations on the street with anglers, especially like, you know, like more like my dad's buddies, you know, like kind of the generation ahead where they would absolutely like just no way would they spend, you know, $7 or $8 or $9 or much less $15 or $18 on a lure of any kind, right? Like that's so much money, right? Yeah. But like the cost of bait, it's like, you know, it's so much cheaper to have a bunch of lead-headed jigs in your tackle box. Well, really, is it? Is it, you know, when you're, you know, forking it out for, you know, spot tails or rainbows or chubs, like if you're a live bait guy, even, you know, gosh, like good jumbo leeches at certain times when they're hard to get, it's like, is it really cheaper to fish live bait? I think, you know, we're probably past that conversation now in a lot of cases, but it's like, that's a great point that I feel like is sometimes hard to drill through certain people's heads. It's like, if you can build yourself some confidence, like we're talking, and if you need to go, you know, if you need to go somewhere else to build that confidence, go somewhere up in Ontario and build your confidence in a week of fishing, and then bring that home for the remainder of your entire career of fishing. Bring that confidence for the next 30 years that you're going to be fishing on your home body of water. And being proficient with these, you know, with a, you know, and a jigging wrap isn't that expensive. I'm talking extreme, but even if you're talking custom colors and all this and you rack up $12 for bait, if you're good at tying knots and you use quality line and you're not breaking off that often, man, you're saving, you're way ahead.
You're way ahead. Yep, 100%. And it's just fun to catch them that way. And I'm not opposed to bait. And there's times when bait is the deal, no doubt. But up there, most of the time, you're winning on artificials.
Dude, those are fun conversations that you just sort of stumble into. I just feel like I've had that conversation where people making jokes about, you know, how many tackle boxes I have in my boat or just how, you know, what I bring for tackle certain situations. Like I'm the type of guy, like I like to be prepared when I go somewhere, I kind of bring everything. Like I'm not very selective in that way. So I always show up with too much stuff and I'm only going to use a few. Man, I can be made fun of pretty easily for how much stuff I'm lugging around wherever, or, you know, the boat's full of gear, right? If you're that guy that's you know, fishing big minnows year round, I enjoy doing all that stuff too. I'm totally a live bait guy at times, but yeah, it's like, man, is anybody really getting off the hook for that? It's like, man, minnows, and you have no dead loss.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's like you don't have dead loss with soft plastics anymore. They're built too well.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's great. I'm the same way. Back in, you know, when we go on trips, between like Jeff Simpson and I do a number of trips, and it's like we're both tackle junkies, and he can't even slam the back of the pickup shut with all the gear you bring. But you know, you're kind of, most of the time you end up, you want to have all that stuff, because all of a sudden you figure out that, like, oh, the dude who's got the green one of that is the guy who's catching all the fish. So you bring it all, and usually it ends up being there's just a couple of them on the deck by the end of the trip, and all the other stuff's back in the truck. But yeah, it just same as you, like, I just don't want to be up there and be like, oh, well, they were biting on this bait, and it's like, oh, I've got three tackle boxes of those sitting at home, but I chose not to bring them, you know. So
that'd be the most devastating thing. I just love the chatter. I love the updates, Jeremy, and just kind of getting in touch with you after I haven't talked to you kind of for a little while. So it's just fun to reach out. I always want to stay in touch and don't let too much time pass without some of these conversations. So I just gonna say that I appreciate it. And yeah, man, I guess if there's nothing else, if anybody thinks of anything, you know, questions or whoever wants to reach out and with a question, after your 19 years in the industry, you've got a lot of experiences to answer a lot of different types of questions. So I would encourage people to do that. Where can people find you, and where can people get a hold of you, or anything that you want to promote?
Sure. Yeah. Check out anglingedge.com. We've got Angling Buzz as well. You can check out either one of those, our websites or our YouTube channels or social media. So yeah, look for Angling Edge and Angling Buzz. And we're kicking out new shows on Angling Edge every week right now too. So you can jump on the website and see what shows are airing. And yeah, it's, if you like multi-species upper Midwest and Canadian fishing, we've got a good lineup of everything from walleyes and pike and trout and muskies and panfish and sunfish, you name it. We kind of covered out on it all. So yeah, so check out Angling Edge and Angling Buzz.
Right on, man.